Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, my finest friends. Welcome to episode 5 of the 8th season of the Tom Petty Project podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Brown. This is the weekly podcast that digs into the entire Tom Petty catalogue, song by song, album by album, and includes conversations with musicians, fans, and people connected with Tom along the way. Some quick social media stuff before we dig into this week's song. First of all, the result of this week's poll. On my website, I have the songs ranked as either bronze, silver, or gold with their scores. Anything with a rating between 1 and 6 is bronze, 7 to 9 is silver, and gold is reserved for those songs that get a maximum 10 out of 10. And so that's how I group them on my Twitter polls. My rating for A Face in the Crowd was 9 out of 10, and I was in the majority on this one, with only 29% of you rating this a 10 out of 10. 52% went with 7 to 9, and 19%, which is way too many, gave this one a 6 out of 10. So overall, kind of what I was expecting. Okay, over on Twitter, at Colton Lillico, I think I pronounced that right, commented, "I have to give Face Out in the Crowd a 10 out of 10. It sounds like nothing else in his catalogue. Hypnotically beautiful melody. The lyrics are so simple yet have so much depth. One of Tom's best vocal performances as well. The first side of Full Moon Fever is basically all 10 for me." And I agreed that it's another one of those unique tracks in Tom's discography, of which there are, you know, increasingly many. ST1B, Stibbs, commented, "My favourite song on the album. It feels like an ignored gem. To be honest, I didn't realise how good it was until the one and only time I heard it on the radio." Handsome Dan Lopez, at Dan's Final Say, says, "Because Tom's catalogue is so voluminous, good word, it could be considered a deep cut among the hits, but not in the usual sense. The lighter tone of You're So Bad might have worked better in that spot. Crowd is so unique, yet indicative of a style that would become more frequent in Tom's music, that I like the idea of it being buried a little deeper on the album, seventh maybe, giving it more of a hidden gem feel." Over on Facebook, Even the Losers says, "It has a haunting feel to it, one of those minor key masterpieces." And I completely agree with that. And Tom didn't write a ton of heavily minor key focused tracks, so they do tend to stand out when he did. And I love this comment from Dana, who says, "It's such a beautiful song. I love the video. And we really all start out as a face in the crowd until we meet that special person." And isn't that the truth? And some of us are stuck with a face for radio on top of it all. Jen Carmichael says, "Seriously, one of my all-time faves. It's beautiful." And Sarah Willis Ryan agrees, saying, "Love it. It's a beautiful song and definitely a favourite of mine." The Peerless Dallas Helica says, "This song is all feel, vibe, and atmosphere. And it's such an awesome vibe. It's almost too simple of a song structure. I do think it's verse-chorus structure. The chorus is every time you hear the claves wood block, but they're so sonically similar, it's hard to tell. The very guitar solo sections add some complexity to spice things up a bit. I think this song could have benefited from a bridge that takes you somewhere else sonically, lyrically, either throwing in another chord or two or a key change. I don't know, maybe that would detract from the overall vibe, but without that, it ends up being a little repetitive. Despite this, the spooky uneasiness, the laid-back feel, the understated gradual build, all make this a solid track. I give it an 8. So there's only one lower than me there, Dallas. There was then a bit of conversation between Dallas, myself, and my friend Will Porteous about key changes, which is worth a read. It's on Facebook if you want to go read that. And thanks again to everyone who commented this week, folks. If I missed your comment, I might just not have caught it before I started writing and compiling the stuff for this episode. So apologies. Oh, maybe I'll get you next week. So today's track covers the last track from side one of Full Moon Fever, the blisteringly brilliant Running Down a Dream. If you're new to the podcast, I don't actually use any of the music from the song in the episode itself out of respect for the estate and to avoid any niggling copyright issues. I'd be surprised if you don't know this track, but in case you don't or you want to listen to it again anyway, there's a link to it in the episode notes that you can fire up before we dig into this classic. For me, Running Down a Dream is all about two things: the opening riff and Mike Campbell's solo. In conversations with Tom Petty, author Paul Zollo remarks that Tom co-wrote the song with Mike, but Tom says, actually, all Mike wrote was that one descending riff. And this isn't Tom being dismissive at all, just accurate. You hear that a lot in interviews when he's asked about, you know, certain specific things to do with specific albums or times or songs, because he has that acute memory for that creative process and quietly but directly corrects people if they're off base. Paul follows up by calling that riff the engine of the song, to which Tom replies, yeah, he had that riff, but in a different time signature. It was kind of a broken beat, much slower. And it's hard to imagine the frenetic pace of this track being dialed back, but Tom continues by saying, I like the lick a lot, and I'd sit around playing it on my guitar, experimenting with it in different ways. I came to think it sounded good in a really straight beat, really fast. He concludes by saying that the clincher came when I played it one night for Jeff, it's Jeff Lynn, and he said, oh, that's good. That might be one of those last riffs left. And man, it's such a memorable riff, right? What it shares in common with all the very best guitar riffs is its simplicity. A novice guitar player can learn this one fairly easily. It's all played on the top string of the guitar and descends down from the 7th to the 6th, the 5th, and the 3rd with an open E played each time in between. There's nothing to it really, but nothing really sounds like it either. The riff doesn't even start on the 1 count. If you count 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and, it actually starts on the 1 and, on the and, the 1 and. So straight away, it's a little bit of tomfoolery that I quite like. The song doesn't mess around either. Like Free Falling and I Won't Back Down, we get to the point pretty quickly. That iconic riff rips the song into life, and on the first 1 count, the drums and bass guitar also come in. Boom, no messing around. Immediately, the drums are locked into a straight backbeat, and we talked in a couple of songs on side one already about programmed drums, and I suspect that the hi-hat is again programmed here. Or it's sampled and sequenced in. Either way, I don't think it's a real hat. The snare is real, though, I'm pretty sure, because those rapid-fire fills coming out of the chorus are all natural. So again, we have a song here with not a ton going on in the rhythm section. The bass guitar is rocking out those root 8th notes, and the drums are just keeping time. But it's a constant, relentless, driving rhythm section that the rest of the song sits on top of. After a short 4-bar intro, we're straight into the first verse. It was a beautiful day, the sun beat down, I had the radio on, I was driving. Two simple lines over two simple chords. It shouldn't be this impactful. You shouldn't be able to do so much with this little. Trees flew by, me and Del were singing, little runaway, I was flying. And a wonderful nod here, obviously, to Tom's friend Del Shannon. Tom tells Paul Zolo that Del was running around with us a little during this time. That's why I threw in the line, me and Del was singing, little runaway. I put that in for him. I got a big smile from him on that. And Little Runaway fit the whole concept, so that was that. I will admit that I'm a sucker for lyrics that reference old songs. There's just something weirdly cool about hearing one legend sing about another. Little Runaway, of course, was a huge international hit and topped the Billboard chart for 4 weeks in 1961. I love the fact that Tom says Del was, quote, running around with us, completely downplaying the fact that he and Jeff Lynne had co-written the first track from Shannon's album he was working on at the time. And, along with the rest of the Heartbreakers minus Stan Lynch, had been the band on Shannon's posthumous 1991 release, Rock On. Yet another legend that the Heartbreakers backed on an album. Tom's vocal on this track is really low in his register. He comments on this in conversations with Tom Petty, saying, I remember saying to them, Jeff Lynne and Mike Campbell, do you think we should change the key? Jeff said, no, it's perfect the way you're doing it. And I think if you pitched up the song a couple of steps, you'd lose that really gritty edge that the open E string provides. It's a riff that works so well because of where on the neck it's played as much as the notes themselves. You know, we focus on that riff and we focus on the driving beat of it, but I think that's easy to miss in this one is the wailing guitar fills that are added in the spaces between the lyrics in the verses. The rhythm guitar, almost definitely played by Tom, is just strumming those big open chords, but in the background you hear what you could at first mistake for a keyboard pad, but is actually Mike Campbell fading in some very tasty little noodles. After the first two lines, we then get the main riff coming in again to remind us it's still there. It's still the heart beating in the subconscious of this song. Right at the start of the second half of this verse, you also hear a prominent guitar stab in the left channel. So again, there's quite a lot of guitar on this, even though it doesn't really sound like it. All those little bits and pieces that Jeff Lynne's throwing back into the mix to give the song a sort of restless sonic quality. The first disc from 1995's playback box set is called The Big Jangle. Surprisingly, Running Down a Dream isn't on that first disc, and I say that because this chorus has a very big jangle. The main riff that starts the song is 7 notes, all 8th notes, on the, you know, that start on the one and in the bar. In the chorus, we get a big jangly acoustic guitar playing the exact same beats. We also have a very jangly, listen to her heart sort of tone guitar playing the straight chord progression. And it's a fun little progression too, because it's a step up, step down, step up, step down. So A, G, E, E, G, A, G, E, E, G, A. You know, we also get a nice little touch here on the bass guitar matching that sort of descending, ascending cadence. The chorus then finishes with one bar of the main riff taking us back into the next verse, accompanied by that machine gun snare fill. In the second verse, the guitar layering comes into play again, as those guitar stabs we heard very briefly in the second half of the first verse become a bit more prominent here, especially in the first half of this verse, chipping in on the second and fourth beats, almost like a reggae rhythm. But they dropped out again, save one louder stab in the second half of this verse. So it's almost the inverse of the first time round. We still have those atmospheric sweeping guitar fills adding texture in the background, and we proceed into the second chorus with little fanfare. The choruses have a great backing harmony from Jeff Lynne that's mixed quite low but just fills out the vocal in this section. The bridge section again is really simple. It's a C, D, E step-up progression with the layered ooh, ooh vocals in the background, again harmonised, and I think probably harmonised by both Jeff and Tom in this case. We get a really cool offbeat drum kick snare pattern with some floor toms mixed low to lead into this section, which help build us into the tension that the bridge creates. This bridge section runs for 10 bars and there's no solo, unless you know this song like the back of your hand, in which case you're already starting to hear Mike's guitar playing at the end of the track, which is played over the same progression. And it echoes back in time and builds your anticipation for the fireworks to come. And the lead back out of the bridge into the third verse I think is really cool because there's no fill, there's no sort of lick or solo or anything, no real marker at all to signal change back into that verse progression. Okay, folks, it's time for some petty trivia. Your question from last week was this. How many albums did Tom have ranked in Rolling Stone's 2020 list of the 500 greatest albums of all time? Was it A, 1, B, 3, C, 0, or D, 4? The answer is 3. On Facebook, Carol Rosenberg Shapiro said, I'm taking a wild stab at the Rolling Stone question, guessing 3 albums in the list, and proceeded to pick Damn the Torpedoes, Full Moon Fever, and Wildflowers. Spot on, Carol, you got them all right. The highest position was Wildflowers at a criminally underrated 214th. Damn the Torpedoes comes in next at 231st, and Full Moon Fever is inexplicably ranked at 298th. Oh wait, it's not inexplicable, is it? It's Rolling Stone. Some of the albums in the top 50 made me shake my head, but lists are basically a bit rubbish generally. Look, if you're going to rank The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, as good as it is, above Revolver by the Beatles, then I think your list may have to be declared null and void. Get a grip, Rolling Stone. Get a grip. Your question for this week is this, and this is a deep, deep cut. In the song US 41 from 2010's Mojo, what was the name of Lucky's wife? Was it A, Sandra Dee, B, Georgie May, C, Bernadette, or D, Annie Brown? Okay, back to the song. The last verse adds one more little bit of production wizardry on the word dark in the line, the sky grew dark. That last word has a huge delay on it to give it that wonderful faint echo. And we get one of my favourite lines in the song in this verse too. I put the pedal down to make some time. I don't know why I love that line so much, but to me it's so evocative. You can just see the whole scene in your mind's eye, and that little detail really makes that mental image pop for me. We then have a harmony vocal on the words waiting down this road to add a touch of colour to this last lead into the final chorus. So, you know, we go through the chorus again, and we then get the offbeat hitch step drum pattern, which led us into the bridge earlier, fooling us into thinking that maybe we're heading into that section again. But instead, we get a repeat of the chorus. This chorus ends with the main riff played 3 times before we head back into that bridge progression and one of the very best solos that's ever been played, in my humble opinion. Am I allowed to say my opinion's humble when I'm hosting a podcast? You know, and giving constant declarations about songs and artists? Okay, here's what we'll do. We'll call it as humble an opinion as a podcast host can give. How about that? At 3 minutes and 2 seconds, Mike Campbell's guitar roars into your consciousness like a meteor burning its way through Earth's upper atmosphere on the brink of either burning itself out or crashing into the planet with a gigantic thud. And you're never really sure which way it's going to go, and thankful for it. This is arguably the first time in a Tom Petty song that we hear Mike Campbell fully and truly take all the brakes and limiters off and just tear into his instrument like a man possessed. There's a superb passage in Conversations with Tom Petty where Tom explains the recording of this solo to Paul Zolo. It only makes this performance even more amazing. Tom says, "The most incredible thing about that one to me, which to this day amazes me, was the solo at the end. There was no one there but me, Mike, and Jeff. We were in Mike's tiny little studio in his house. Mike was just sitting there with his head down, and that bit came and he started to play." Now that alone should send shivers down your spine. But it's what Tom says next that cements this solo in the very, very top echelon for me. He goes on, "He played that incredible solo, but he looked like a stone statue. He didn't ever blink or move. And he had his back to us. I remember Jeff looking around his shoulder and looking back at me and making this face like, is he really doing this? It was one take, and he played that incredible solo. Can you imagine being in that room? Can you imagine seeing that magic happen? That gigantic drop halfway through the solo and all the bends and the Stone Cold fury of it. If anyone were ever to doubt Mike Campbell's ability as a lead guitarist and a shredder, those doubts should have been blown to dust after hearing this performance. And I've talked about this a little bit before too, but some musicians have to really work at solos, composing and structuring them. Brian May from Queen's a good example. Some people play entirely by feel. Stevie Ray Vaughan would be a good example of that, right? Mike was definitely more of the latter, but even so, to pull something like this out of thin air in one take and done, no second take, no backups just in case, one take is just utterly extraordinary. Now, Jimmy Page apparently also played the solo that ended up in Stairway in one take, but he also did record two or three other takes just in case, and just in case they wanted to use them. I would humbly submit that this solo is more impressive. It has more different distinct parts and different techniques thrown into it, and it so perfectly sends the song spiraling off into infinity that had someone actually tried to write a solo here, it just wouldn't work. It's one of those moments of genius that us rock and roll fans live and breathe for. It's pure dynamite. The lyrics in this song overall are tight, concise, and as I said earlier, really evocative. It's a relentless, determined, unapologetic, slightly ominous, and just expertly crafted lyric. Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Working on a mystery, going wherever it leads. That's the freedom and sort of wanderlust, I think, that started in Dogs on the Run, but it reaches its frenzied zenith in this track. Hey, look at that. Two words with the letter Z back to back at no extra cost there, folks. And sorry to my American friends, I simply cannot bring myself to say Z. It's not Z, it's Z. It's definitely Z. Running Down a Dream is, unsurprisingly, the joint third most played live song in Tom's catalogue. It's a staple for every cover band that's ever taken to the stage, and Mike Campbell still plays it with the Dirty Knobs almost every gig. The song reached number 22 on the Billboard chart and number 1 on the rock chart, and was accompanied by a fantastic black and white cartoon video that not everyone loves, apparently, but which is introduced by Tom's enigmatic hat-wearing character, who also introduces the video for I Won't Back Down. At 4 minutes and 23 seconds, it's also the longest song on Full Moon Fever, mainly because, as Tom said in other interviews, they just wanted to keep as much of that solo in as possible. And for the single, none of that was edited out either. The whole thing, the 4 minutes and 23 seconds, was what was released. And most stations would actually leave the song on until the natural fade, rather than fade it out early. That's how compelling and iconic that solo really is. Okay, Pettyheads, that's it for this week. In his fantastic memoir, Tom Petty and Me, John Scott calls Running Down a Dream one of the greatest driving songs I've ever heard, and you get his point completely. It's a juggernaut of a rock and roll song, but it isn't overpowering sonically. Again, Jeff Lynne leaves enough sonic space for the song to breathe, but adds in just enough flair to keep you interested all the way through. It's an urgent and riveting song, almost as if it's an hour and a half action movie packed into 4.5 glorious minutes of pop rock perfection. On a superb album side, as the closer, this is the one that actually takes the cake for me. If my rating system went to 11, this would be occupying that space. As it is, I'll give this the easiest 10 out of 10 I can award. The Tom Petty Project is a proud member of the Deep Dive Podcast Network. Go check them out on Twitter at Deep Dive Podnet. I'm sure that you'll find something there that you like. Also check out my other podcast, Seaside Pod Review, a Queen podcast. And also, I've got a brand new podcast called The Ultimate Catalogue Clash. You can find that at Ultimate Catalogue Clash on Facebook and at U Catalogue Clash on Twitter. This season, we're covering Phil Collins' era Genesis, and that's Corey Morissette and myself. He's the co-host of And the Podcast Will Rock, among many other podcasts. Great guy, and it's a lot of fun to do. Don't forget to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at The Tom Petty Project, and on Twitter at Tom Petty Project. Go follow, like, subscribe as applicable, and again, please leave a review or a rating if you haven't done that already. Keep talking to me on social media. I'm enjoying reading out some of your comments. Hopefully that won't take up too much space. And on my other Queen podcast, that usually takes about 20 minutes, so I won't quite go that far, but do keep leaving comments, please. The Tom Petty Project, as a reminder, is not affiliated with the Tom Petty Estate in any way. And when you're looking for Tom's music, please visit all the official channels, Spotify, Apple Music, you know, Amazon, YouTube, those places. If you want to find official merchandise, similarly, go to tompetty.com. Don't buy knockoff, don't buy ripoff stuff. If you want merchandise for the podcast, you can find that at tompettyproject.com. And please don't forget to check out the Tom Petty Nation and Tom Petty Fans Forever groups on Facebook. They're, as I always say, they're excellent fan communities and well worth spending a little bit of time in. Until we meet again next week, keep listening to and sharing Tom's music. Try to be kind, Try to say I love you to someone at least once a day. Stay safe and healthy, and I'll be back with you next week to talk about the first track from side two of Full Moon Fever and the first cover version to make it onto a Tom Petty album. Feel a whole lot better. Bye-bye.